Hey, Sage.
Linkage. Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Fantastic.
How are you guys doing? How's your home?
It's going. Yeah, I mean, they're going slowly, but they're getting it done. But I took your address and put the background up so you couldn't see me.
Hey, you're doing the same thing right now. What's in the background you got there, Ruben? What's in the background?
Now this just empty. No, there's actually just nothing much. Just my wife's a teacher, and so our dining room has just been converted into her little virtual classroom. And I actually don't think it doesn't look anything bad at all. But yeah, I don't know, trade secrets, I guess.
Right on.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, now she just wants to be like, you know, oh, it's a big mess, even though, you know, it looks pretty organized to me. But then
there's
books.
Most ladies are like that. Not me, but most ladies are like that. They just like, yeah, definitely not you, Rebel.
Right. It still looks like the wardrobe trailer. Is what it looks like.
That's me, man.
I love the wardrobe trailer. Hey. Ruben, don't you love the wardrobe trailer?
Yeah, no, the wardrobe trailer is great. It smells good all the time because all the clothes are just freshly laundered.
Right, right. And there's always someone asking you to take your clothes off. You're like, hey, okay.
Oh, no, well, I get pretty embarrassed. Like, oh, I'm sure. Like, hashtag me too. Like, I don't want to be showing anything. I'm just kidding. Are you sure you want to see it?
Just the polar opposite. He's like, get undressed.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, and without fail, every time, and I don't know why they do this, but it's always a young, attractive woman in there telling me to take my clothes off, and I'm like, okay.
Well, that's the very exact same reason why I have the other reaction, like, I'm so embarrassed.
You know what? I'm no prize, but if you know, if anybody's asking me, I'll say, okay, you can look if you want.
Oh, build yourself up.
This podcast has escalated real quick.
We got editing. Don't worry about it.
Stop telling people that. Please, you make my job difficult. You tell everybody, we'll just do that in editing. We'll fix it.
They'll just start spatting out things. Gosh, let me just put my Mac charger right here.
Hey, look, hey, all I know is the hashtag me too. I definitely want that to stay in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's like.
So, hey, Rebel, please introduce the man.
Okay. Hey, listeners, we have with us the amazing, outstanding Ruben. How do you pronounce your last name?
Yes, I would say like the video game console or saying yes in French. Yeah, it's a very old Chinese, Southern Chinese name, but I'm of the Chinese diaspora, even though originally I'm from the Philippines.
Okay.
Yeah, I caught that in your resume. I was very I'm very interested to hear about acting school in the Philippines, only because I mean I grew up in Los Angeles, and I had I have Filipino friends from school. I also have like people that when I went into the workforce that I worked with that were Filipino. My mother's best friends were Filipino, and we would go to their home. So I got a lot of the culture, you know, the blood soup and
yes. It's called Dinuguan to all the listeners out there. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. For sure. And just so I'm very interested in hearing about acting school in the Philippines. I saw that on your resume and I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Oh, right. Well, actually, I did not go to acting school. What happened with my life is that I'm Chinese Filipino, which is something in and of itself. It's a pretty unique upbringing back in the Philippines because all the Asian stereotypes that we have here in America are attributed to the Chinese diaspora in Southeast Asia. So in the Philippines, it's the Chinese who get the stereotype of like, oh, you go to business, oh, you become a professional, you become a lawyer and all that. So because Filipinos can sing, Filipinos can dance, yes. Filipinos can act. So it's in the, you know, it's in the blood, so to speak, but with Chinese. So I'm 3/4 Chinese and 1/4 Filipino, my mom's half. So a lot of the singing, acting, and dancing and the dramatics in Filipino culture come from the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, in Asian cultures as well, where there are Asian cultures where performing is encouraged, you would see a church background like the Koreans and Filipinos. And so I grew up Catholic. So I inherited some of that. You know, you'd sing the church hymns, you'd put up the church plays, and you reenact the
Amazing Grace.
Oh, I actually, I'm sorry to say, I do not memorize the lyrics of that song. It's different. I probably know a lot of the Tagalog hymns and stuff.
Right. Hey, don't feel bad, Ruben, because she actually, Rebel actually said, you know, I asked her, hey, I play guitar. I'll learn a song. What song would you like me to play? She says, Amazing Grace. She's got a thing for the Amazing Grace, man.
Well, you know, grace is pretty amazing, you know?
It is.
Yeah. What happened was so as a kid, I was the youngest of 4 children. I have 3 sisters. And of course, when you're the youngest, you tend to entertain everybody. And, you know, when you have a big family, and of course, all Filipino families are big. And so you're the ones entertaining everyone. And then what was it? I think I visited the States the very first time when I was 8 to visit my family. And of course, we had our eye towards coming here in the first place. We knew we were going to come here sooner or later. And so we were trying to assimilate and, you know, start visiting. And we have family here. And I just noticed that I had a very thick Filipino accent when I visited here at 8 years old, and I was trying to order a Mountain Dew, and I pronounced it as Mountain Dew, which is very, you know, for all the Filipinos out there, they'll know exactly what I was trying to say. But people here were like, whoa, what was that? And I would point it out. It's that green thing. And they're like, oh, it's Mountain Dew. It's like in mountain, but it has a T. It's supposed to be tuh, or, you know, whatever it is. And so that's when I started kind of changing my accent. So people here started to understand me. And then as soon as I came back, a lot of people were teasing me because they're like, oh, you're one of those people who just went on vacation and then you come back with a different accent. And so that's how I started to get a taste of mimicking other people. I started doing impressions of my teachers, and I started becoming a performer for my classmates, something of a class clown. And then because
Sage
of that,
can probably relate to that.
Yeah, because of that, my mom enrolled me in theater classes when I hit high school. And I grew up in a boys' school. It was an all-boys Catholic school. And so that was my first taste of meeting girls as well. My first girlfriend came from theater school. So, of course, every summer I was like, hey, mom, it's summertime. Maybe you can enroll me. So I didn't go to a conservatory per se, but I went to theater camp every summer. And if you have talent, they kind of try to reel you in a little bit. Yeah. And you know, we're islanders in the Philippines, so we had an excuse to perform once on this island, even though it wasn't in, you know, in the Caribbean. It's in Southeast Asia, but still, we relate to a lot of the same social dynamics. You know, we have colorism as well, so that part of the social aspect of once on this island, we could actually relate to. So I started off as a musical theater guy, as with most Filipino theater actors. And then I tried to stop myself from going to acting because it's not encouraged for my culture, you know, being Chinese Filipino. And so I tried to I enrolled myself in when I went to university, I chose management information systems as my major because I was trying to oh, I'm going to be a proper professional corporate guy. I'm not gonna be an actor. No, I'm not.
I'd
still join the college theater groups, and I'd still book like the lead or like the prince in what was that? Into the Woods. So I played Rapunzel's prince, but then they wanted me to play the wolf as well, which was a faster, quick change than it would be if you were playing Cinderella's prince.
Right.
Yeah, totally loved Sondheim growing up, and then from there, our musical director for Once on This Island in college, because I did the play a second time, wanted to form an a cappella group. And so I became part of an a cappella group and we became famous. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to be a singer. I'm not going to be an actor. I'm going to be a singer. But then when you're part of a singing group, of course, there's, you know, it's
egos,
a group.
Egos and dynamics.
Egos and stuff. And
to deal with. And
yeah.
Someone wants to always be the lead. And
Musicians
are the thing all around, yeah.
Little jealousies like that. And so I quit the group because I was being bullied by this one particular guy. And then after I leave, he leaves the next year. And I was like, if I had only known you were going to leave, then I wouldn't have left. But it's fine. We're okay now. But at that time, he was like 98% of the reason why I left. And then when I left the singing group, at that time, I already graduated college. And I was making money by doing a lot of voiceovers for commercials.
Awesome.
But from there, I had connections from old college classmates who told me that, this theater company is putting out auditions for Altar Boys. I don't know if you're familiar with Altar Boys. It's an off-Broadway musical about a Christian boy band. and so it breaks the fourth wall. Yeah. And the audience, of course, are a bunch of sinners and they're trying to save the audience. But by the end of the show, there are still four unsaved people left. And there are five boy band members and they discover it's the four members of their group. And the only one who can be admitted to heaven was the Jewish guy because he actually embodies Christian values more than his four other bandmates. Cause you know, as we just mentioned with music, there are jealousies and egos and stuff.
Right.
So it was a good kind of through line into going back into theater. And since then I was bitten by the theater bug and I started acting once again. Sorry, it's a long intro.
No. Totally fine.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And you know what? It's definitely that kind of thing that once it gets you, mm-hmm. you can try and run, you can try and hide, you can try and deny that you're an entertainer, but it doesn't go away.
That is true. Because I tried. I tried to like, so when I finally came here to LA, because my family is based in the Bay Area, that's where, you know, that's the place we called home when we moved here. But I wanted to be an actor. So I said, okay, LA is just down there. There's no excuse for me not to go down there and try. But I got into a really good sales job. And I tried to maybe I should just do this instead because it's bringing me the money right now. But that was also the darkest times of my life. So I can only say I tried. I tried ancestors. It just wasn't in the cards for me.
Right. The shame is mine. I will bear it.
Yes. I didn't bring honor to you all like Mulan. I'm just kidding.
Oh my goodness.
I really relate to that because growing up, my best friends were Korean. And so they would always impart me with their culture because I would be at their house all the time. Please, thank you, and all those other kinds of things. And, you know, don't put your chopsticks over the bowl. And, you know, they would tell me things. And so whenever the topic of entertainers came up, because like there would be the Korean variety shows and Korean soap operas were always on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's cool stuff, man. I was like, that's you know, huge for entertainment to be that way. And I remember one of my friends looking at me saying, dude, man, entertainers are the bottom of the barrel. We think actors they're just kind of dirtbags. We take them for what they're worth, but they're not really held in high esteem in our culture. I was like, whoa, that's weird.
Right.
Because here in my culture, you know, people flip out and think that entertainers are the greatest things in the world, yeah. Which, I don't know, but we do need entertainment.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That,
entertainers are cool.
Oh yeah. It's necessary. Aww.
Thanks, Rebel.
It's totally cool.
No, but it's funny to think, like, even back then during Shakespearean times, right? Like, or I think with Moliere, during his time, when you're an actor, you can't be buried in the same cemetery as respectable people. You were
right.
seen as the same as, like, prostituting yourself. And even until today... today we respect sex workers now. I mean, you have to do what you have to do to feed yourself, to feed whatever it is. I mean, you have to do what you have to do. I can't blame right. anybody for their hustle, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know. What,
No, I mean, I'm just of the belief that everybody would want a better situation for themselves. I don't think anybody really chooses... Yeah. to be in a position where everybody wants an honest living. But if a person is put into a situation where she has to do something specific to survive, as long as they're not hurting anybody, hey, I mean, I can't judge. I used to judge. I used to judge a lot. And I just figure, like, you know, once I felt like real honest despair, that's when I felt, hey, you know what? I wouldn't be standing on my own 2 feet if there weren't, you know, friends and family around me who helped me up. But then some people don't have anybody, you know? Yeah. So
true.
Just.
I understand that. I'm always thankful for my family and my son.
Right. Right.
Like people like Sage keeping me entertained. And
I'm always grateful that I've been able to give up some of my tail for money.
and Sage, you're from the Latin culture, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, which specific one?
Well, I am one of those very real Mexican Americans. My grandfather was first generation. My grandmother was from Tijuana. On my mother's side, my grandmother and grandfather were both from New Mexico, and they actually, I guess for lack of a better term, were indigenous to the continent. They came from Indians and other immigrants that came to America. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
the originals.
Yes.
Not the vampire ones.
I guess I was very much a part of the assimilation generation. When my parents went to high school, they were punished for speaking Spanish at school. That was kind of my, that was where I came from.
That in California?
Yeah, that was in California.
Wow. My Spanish teacher in high school, his name is Javier, and he always went by Harvey. And his wife, I'm friends with his wife on Facebook. He hops on there occasionally. And she posted a few years ago about like the inequality and that, you know, that wasn't right, that he had to go by an Americanized name. And I was like, yeah, totally not right, because Javier is so much more badass than Harvey.
For sure.
So.
The Spanish abbreviation is minus the R, Javi. I had friends named Javier back in the day, and we called him Javi, which is still more badass than Harvey. And
he was one of the coolest dudes ever. Like, he said, I'm going to teach you enough Spanish in this class for you to talk your way out of a Mexican prison.
You don't need language. You just need $50. Been there. Done that.
I don't want to know, Sage.
And then aside from, how do you start selling? I'm just kidding. You just start talking about, like, so the commerce inside the prison. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Well, that's
basically, cash in your pocket. You got to have cash in your pocket.
Hey, but you know what? Just hearing that is kind of like, it's because, again, in my opinion, like, well, it's not an opinion. It's fact that, of course, Mexicans are the original Americans. It's pretty ironic that they're stopping Mexicans from being Mexican because Americans stole Batman from the Mexicans because the original Batman is Zorro.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. They're like, yes. He was the even that's the reason why the Wayne family was watching Zorro. It's because that was the very basis of his character in terms of fighting crime.
Yeah. Right down to the mask. He just pointed up the ears. That was it.
Right.
So he took the brim off the hat and pointed up the ears.
Yeah. So I can't wait for an original Mexican Zorro because I didn't know that Antonio Banderas was full Spaniard until way into my adulthood. Like, really? He's been taking all the Mexican roles and then, you know, he's just been getting tanned, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why is he playing Picasso? I thought he was Mexican. It's like, no, he's Spanish. I was like, oh. And then I was like, wait, but was Picasso Spanish? Wasn't he like, I didn't know he was Picasso Spanish or was he French?
I thought he was French.
Yeah, I thought he was French.
I guess for them, it's like, oh, any Latin actor would do. Like,
right.
You know
how they operate.
Right. Well, because that's the one thing. Like, Filipinos, in my opinion, are Latin Asian.
Yes.
Because we share a lot of the same traits, you know, because we were also a Spanish colony for 300 years. And the Mexican galleon, the trade route, we were the final destination, and that it would go back to Mexico and then go back to Spain. And Philippines in terms of was named after King Philip.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Right.
I didn't think I knew that.
Yeah. All different parts of Southeast Asia had different white masters. Like, so the Philippines had the Spaniards, and I think who had the Dutch? Someone had the Dutch. And then someone had the French. Vietnam had the French.
Vietnam had the French.
That's why they have baguettes and great coffee in Vietnam. And then Hong Kong had the Brits. India had the Brits. And then, that's the reason why there's... So, for example, my last name, Wee, it's spelled U-Y in the Philippines. But in Indonesia, it's spelled O-E-Y. But in Malaysia, it'll be spelled O-O-I. It's because it's different anglicizations.
Right.
Anglicizations. I don't know how to say that word.
Ruben, you're safe.
Right. Right, yeah. And then, so you both were in the creative fields, are still in the creative fields? Like, because Tennessee is a music town, and I see a guitar.
Hey. Well, I acted and did music. Well, I've done music since I was able to teach myself two chords. Wow. And then a third chord. And I played in a few bands, and then I went into acting. I acted for about right about 10 years. When the economy tanked back 13 years ago now.
In
2008.
Yeah.
Things got kind of rough, and then I met someone, and I came out to Tennessee, and I kind of left entertainment behind for the most part. I mean, other than cracking jokes and putting on for my friends at work, you know, because I mean, that's the best part of being able to make yourself believable. Mm-hmm. For lack of a better term, is you can say most anything to anyone and have them captivated, either have them laughing or have them scared or have them worried that you're crazy or, you know, make them believe something going on.
I worry.
And then turn around and go,
all the time.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It's just a joke. I'm just joking. I'm just having fun. So, I mean, I still do it mostly for my own entertainment, but I do have a background in it, and Rebel over there is tirelessly trying to get me back in. She made me shoot headshots today.
Oh,
I did. It was under duress.
Under duress.
So you're like the guardian angel on the shoulder and be like, "Hey, hey, headshots right now."
Right.
I'm more like the dark angel on the shoulder. But that's cool. Whatever.
Yeah. I guess it's different, in terms of perspective.
Yeah. Like, and then,
Then how about you, Rebel? Do you perform too as well? Or do you sing?
I try to sing. I really love the drums. I'm not great at it. I try, but I'm not great. I played piano for a really long time, but I haven't played lately. I'm a published poet. My art is more like of the writing sort, not songs, but like poetry. And I did have a blog, but I'm taking a break from that. And mainly, I just like to talk. And so I thought a podcast would be cool. And there are multitudes of people whom I still need to talk to in the world. And I'm also a little bit fearless as far as reaching out to people, you know, and just saying, hey, this is what we've got going on. Do you want to do this? I think it'll be fun for you, just like I did to you, Ruben.
Right, right. It was just like, oh, hey, yeah, okay, I do it.
Ruben was like,
Rebel, in my opinion, is the next mover and shaker and maker of happenings.
Right.
She's the next healthy thing.
Yeah. Is there a healthy acting community right there in Tennessee?
The closest, well, there is, but it's not. The money isn't very good. But down in Atlanta, yes, that's maybe 3 hours from here.
Right.
3.5. And that's got a very large acting community.
Mm-hmm. And actually,
pays well.
Just a few pokings around and a few talkings to some people that I've run into. There's actually a studio that was recently built in Middle Tennessee in a town called Smyrna. And it's a multifaceted, multiplex, multimedia studio, like anything you would find in Burbank type of setup. And of course, you know, there's a lot of space out here, so they build them big. And there's a lot of there's casting and there's production that goes on in Tennessee. For the most part, though, from what I've heard, it seems to kind of lean more towards like the music industry. So like a lot of music videos, a lot of things involving country music and other music related things going on.
Right.
But I can foresee it being larger than it is, simply because, I mean, out on the coasts, and not just because of, you know, the pandemic and all that, but on the coast, it's been getting harder and harder and harder to afford productions to, you know, to do these things. So, I mean, just the fact that you're out there working, one, speaks volumes about your talent. And also, lets you know that you're in there with those who are still able to do it out there. And that's a great thing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And also, I've done some acting and stuff myself, but it's not, I was actually in a music video.
Nice.
Kind of a random thing I did with a friend of mine, or for a friend of mine, as part of a big group of people. But I did some acting before that in theater here locally in Middle Tennessee. Nothing major. My favorite spot to be is walk into a room and somebody hands me a mic and says, hey, make people laugh, or, you know, like MC this, introduce people. That's
right.
Give me a mic and I'm gold. I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
Right.
I have terrible social anxiety walking into a room, but if you hand me a mic, that's my cloak of invisibility.
Yeah, put her in charge of the room and she's fine.
Yeah. They just like, goodness, yes, that is so true. But yeah. So, and we just decided to do this. It was Sage's idea. And I just ran with it.
Quite literally. We were talking one night, and you know, sometimes when you're having a conversation, you're just having such a good time, and it's you I mean, and being in entertainment, because you're in entertainment, Ruben, so you get that feel when something is fun, you mm-hmm. know, when something
there's an energy.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And I caught that, and it just came right out of my mouth. I'm like, you know what, Rebel, we should do a podcast. Quite literally, week and a half, 2 weeks later. Hey, so I got this computer, and I got some mics. Are you ready? What's our podcast about? I'm like, oh, what? Oh, okay, let's do it. All right. So basically, we start up just, you know, just talking trash.
Right. We did. We've grown since episode one.
We have.
It's gotten much for sure. Since episode one.
Well, it's great that you're getting people from LA and people from all over, you know? Yeah. And then you have like some craftsmen, and I was like, oh, wow. It's such an eclectic group of people.
Yeah.
I can't. Yeah. And I'm really honored to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's our honor entirely. We just talk.
Yeah. We might even have, I know this guy who he builds guitars out of recycled products, and he's sold these guitars to like one of the guitarists in Aerosmith and and so I know this guy, and I just think it would be cool to have him on. So hey, Sean, if you're listening, I'm gonna be hitting you up soon, brother.
Sponsor us. Give us a new guitar. Right, right here. Right.
Famous last word.
Sage, pluck out some tunes. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I did write our theme song.
Yes.
Or at least the lick anyway. Yeah. So back to you, Ruben, because this isn't about us. This is about you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yes. Right. No, I have a tendency of like trying to veer the, you know, because I'm curious about other people as well. Yes. Ask away.
We love that. We love it. Okay. So Rebel turned me on to Bosch. You're going to be one of two actors that is actually working on that show. And I was wondering if, have you met or do you know Alejandro Patiño?
Actually, no. But I think I've heard of him because I'm currently in an improv class and I'm working with this guy, Michael J. Gonzalez. Okay. And then he told me that his friend Alejandro is like, hey, because I just shot for Bosch like a week ago.
So did he.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what he was saying. Like, hey, so my classmate in improv is like, hey, Ruben, so did you have to stay in a hotel? Because my friend Alejandro, they had him stay in a hotel. I was like, no. I didn't have to. I just took like four COVID tests, though. So we were just kind of exchanging notes as how it's being done right now. And so for me, I was being tested like almost every 3 days, make it up to the day of taping. And they still tested me on that day as well. So it's great to see the industry really taking that seriously. And so we can feel safe on set, because I totally felt safe on set.
Yeah.
But it's great because I play a uniformed officer in the show, and my first appearance was season 3, but that was just in the studio because it was just in the precinct. I played the original breakdown for my character, Officer Inocti, was this arrogant but good-looking cop, and I was like, what does that have to do with anything? But and then I read the script, like, there's nothing in the script that required him to be as such, but if it's in the breakdown, whatever.
Yeah,
so I just kind that? Of yeah. Yeah, so I kind of just integrated that he's kind of a little full of himself, because that's what the lines kind of clued into anyway. So season 3 was about the Koreatown killer, and I was like basically telling the detective that we're on the case that we already got the guy, but he wasn't the guy, but because I was full of myself. So that was my first ever appearance. And then in season 5, I've worked with Paul Calderon, who is one of the great Latin actors. Paul Calderon, he's a recurring in the show, but he's best known, I think, he was supposed to be the original guy that Samuel Jackson played in Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
right.
That's
and
right.
It was supposed to be him. Yeah, but then Sam Jackson came and really wiped the floor with everybody.
He did.
But they still, because Tarantino loved Paul, he still gave him the role of the bartender. And he's a lovely guy. He's really into theater. He's a New Yorker. And I learned a lot from him. And then season 7 is the newest one that I'm going to come out in. That's for next year. And so it's a terrific experience working with these guys.
Yeah.
Now, from the aspect of the general storyline of that show, being that it's policing in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I have this idea of a question. How does that push up against, I don't know, anything you may have experienced working in Hollywood? Or, I mean, does it seem like there's any kind of true through line with the story in relation to the culture of Hollywood and, like, I guess the seedy part of it? Or right. Is it just a big made-up story?
From watching the show myself and from what we've, because yeah, Hollywood is so, well, LA in general, right? Like, you have the glitzy part of LA, you have the Beverly Hills and the Brentwoods, and then you have the Beverly Hills of the East, which is, what was that? Was it Boyle Heights?
Right.
And that area, which
easy,
used to be,
my people are from there.
Exactly. Well, my historic Filipino town is close by, dude.
For sure, right? For sure.
And then just a few more blocks is San Gabriel Valley, where my Chinese
where
side
up.
Is. Yes, which there's a lot of the real good Chinese food. So it's I don't know. So when I compare New York to LA, LA is just because New York is so compressed and then LA is so spread out. And so it's so easy to form these enclaves, you know, where so for Filipinos per se, like there's Panorama City, there's all Filipinos in Panorama City. There's a lot in Glendale. There's a lot in historic Filipino town. There's a lot in Carson. And then, of course, there's just a lot of Latin people everywhere because, again, the originals. Right? And that, and
we were
that's
there
what
first,
I
just, eh?
Right. And that's what I discovered, like, you can't represent LA without Latin people, and which I think the show really does well, you know, like there's make sure to show like that side of town. And I actually think it's a good so in terms of policing, because of course you have the people who are in power, because there's a lot of mayor, and the mayor wanted to do certain things, and of course the money's going here, but since the money's going here, then this part of town doesn't get the money, and of course poverty brings about a lot of crime. It's not really racial, crime is never really anything else but just a lack of basic needs, which lead people, force people to have to, which again, if we go back to what I said earlier, like if people got to do what they got to do, who can say what in terms of what they need to do to survive? And I think the show does a good job of just showing LA for what it is. And even Bosch himself, he's so flawed as a character. He's a bit of an alcoholic.
He is.
Yeah. You know, it's very noir, right?
It is. It just makes me feel like Vegas and mobstery kind of, you know, like, he's just the coolest character, though.
Right. The show, I think, does a good job of how fragmented LA really is. It's not a homogenous city like, let's say, Vegas is, right? Vegas, casinos, bada bing, bada boom, whatever. And then you got New York, and New York is homogenous as well. You know, even the way they're. The way it's gentrifying now, the way it, back then that it was so crime-ridden, the way it's, you know, New York always has an identity, but LA is many different identities. It's very much a totally different experience altogether. And what I did to prepare for the show was I did a ride-along with my wife's colleague's husband. So he happens to be a sheriff. Somewhere up in the Calabasas area. And then that's where I finally saw like how it is to you know, for, man, it's a stressful job to be a cop. Like we were just eating McDonald's one moment, and then the next moment he hears something. And of course it's, you know, it's all walkie talkie. So it's like, that's all I heard.
And then all of a sudden he's like, then he starts driving and we're going real fast. And I'm like back in my seat like this, like, oh my God, we're driving so fast. And then apparently we were already being called upon this place. And then there, by the time we got there, there were already three other cop cars. And then he was like, stay here. And then he comes out and then he walks to his, you know, his colleagues. And then they just talk a little bit. And then I guess their leader comes out. I don't know if he's like a whatever, the leader, the point guy, because I don't know, like they all wear the same uniform. Who decides which?
Right.
But they waited for that guy. And when that guy came, then he was able to disperse the instructions. And then they went to this particular house. And I guess the owners of that house was in a car right across the street, afraid to come in because they saw something weird. And then so I think I saw like the flashlights inside, but they were all like high alert. It was very stressful. And I was like, oh my God. I was texting my friend like, anyway, if something happens to me tonight, just
they didn't give me a flak jacket.
Right. But no, it's not nothing really happened. It was all good. But it was pretty much a blast. But at the same time, I'm like, man, it's a hard job. You know, they have to, a lot of things race through your mind. A lot of things race through my mind that I'm not even like officially, like, I was just there. I was just an audience member.
Going to the cop show tonight, babe. See you later.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, for that to happen every day. And then I got to see like their boards where they actually, you know, hunt down, like, because apparently a bunch of kids have been stealing, have been like making robberies. And, you know, you actually see those things where they trace, oh, same pattern of behavior over here and same pattern. You know, those, the stereotypical Venn diagrams and flow charts that you see, they actually have that for real. And I'm like, ah, interesting. I see. You know? Yeah. So it's, hey, I salute them for, you know, for what they do. It's a pretty hard job.
I'm right there with you because my idea of it is that, and it's unfortunate, but they have to witness, interact, and deal with some of the very worst of the human condition.
Right.
But they unfortunately have to see and deal with people at their worst.
Right, right.
Yeah. So my hat always goes off to them.
Right. And so, you know, I mean,
me over just for being Mexican.
Right. Hey, I got pulled over too. So I mean, and that's the thing that I wanted to touch on. Like, of course, I'm very much aware of what's going on, and I am, of course, more supportive of you know, I'm supportive of Black Lives Matter, right? And I'm supportive of reform of some sort. But it's not because I disrespect the job, but it's because it is such an important job that more stringent stuff needs to be in place. Like I said, it is a stressful job. So maybe we're putting too much in these people's plates. Maybe some things need to happen so that they can execute better. It's important. I don't think anybody who, in my opinion, like Ruben's opinion, I don't think defund the police really means to abolish. That's not true. But it's to, maybe we need to take this out of your plate so you can do the other jobs a lot better.
Maybe they need to refund, like, not give back, but like
redistribute your, like my wife's a teacher. They've been defunding education for years. We need to refund education.
Yeah.
like put those things back. It's not, you know, on my side, I respect like what they do a lot, especially since I've seen what's going on out there. And so for example, I live in Pasadena here in Los Angeles. Police here are great. I love them. I believe they're doing their jobs really great. The chief is doing an awesome job. Yeah, but I have a story too. One time of, but this was, I think, in one of the Heights. I think it was either in Roland Heights or Hacienda Heights, because like I told you, I started working in sales as my first survival job, my first ever survival job here in LA. I was a door knocker for a solar company.
And in both of those areas, those are more of a sprawling suburbia type of
right. Their land is huge, so trapped. And hilly, very hilly. So I, as a door knocker, I wasn't really walking for miles. I would like drive every six homes and then knock on each of their doors. At first, when I was doing my job, I would just knock. And then if there was nobody answering, I just ignored, because I was like, hey, no one's at the door. But then with sales, and this is kind of like my little beef with capitalism, is they'll be like, well, you need to talk to 100 people a day. Like, well, what will I do? What should I do if they're not answering? Well, you need to find a way to make them answer the door. So I started becoming more obnoxious. I was like, hey, knock, 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 ding, dong, ding, dong, ding, dong. I was really finding a way for them to, you know, because, hey, it's what they told me to do. So that's what I'm going to do. Sometimes I'd even walk to the back just to see if they're there. Hello, sir. And I'd make sure I was pretty loud, just so, you know, because in my opinion, if you're loud, you're not sneaking around.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know.
That seems right.
They didn't train me that well either. So again, they just put me out there. Hey, just knock on those doors and you should be talking to 100 people. And I really took that job seriously.
Right.
And then as I was doing my job, so I was like, so an hour into it, I guess, then there's a helicopter above me, like, and I was like, oh, wonder what's going on. Proceeded to do my job. 15 minutes later, and I was like, oh, something must be happening, because that helicopter is like really flying around. Oh, hope nobody's hurt. And then 10 minutes later, and then I eventually end up in a cul-de-sac, right? So I park my Prius. It's a Prius. I parked my a 2008 slow-ass Prius. I parked it right there. Then I did my whole thing where I walked around. By the time I came back, there was a cop car right beside my Prius. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, again, I'm of the belief if you comply and you just act respectful, you should be fine. So that's what I did. I'm as you can see, I'm a happy, jolly fellow.
You are.
Definitely.
I just did the same thing. Hello. Hi. Is there anything wrong? Excuse me, sir. Is this your Prius? And I was like, yes, that is my Prius. So we need to ask you some questions right now. And I was like, wait, I work for this company. And get this, my badge was just a cut up paper that was printed off a printer.
Yeah.
And this was a legit company in Torrance, but that was all they were willing to spend. Okay. And they bought my plastic cover for my badge in an Office Depot or whatnot. So of course the officer was going to be like, you could have just printed that badge to your home. And I was like, and as soon as I looked at it, I was like, she's right. And there's nothing I can say about that. But then I was like, okay, sir, but, no, ma'am, maybe I can call my supervisor. That could just be your friend posing as your supervisor. And I was like, oh, God. But then there was an assumption of guilt in the tone. There was just like, no, a lot of people have been calling and you've been causing a disturbance. And I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, maybe that's it. Although, to be honest with you, I wasn't that obnoxious all the time. Of course, it takes so much amount of energy. I was like, sometimes I just knock and be like, okay, there's nobody. But I would try real hard. But then apparently some people have called and, you know, that chopper was hovering around because of me. And then eventually another cop car stopped right beside hers and said, oh yeah, blank, blank solar. My cousin works for that company. He's good.
Wow.
And then So that's what I did first. Like, whoo, whoo. And then her demeanor changed. She was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, like all of a sudden I'm a human being again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, hey, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's okay. It's okay. Maybe next time, blank, blank, blank. Thank you for your time. Bye.
Yeah. Don't walk by the side of the house shouting into the backyard.
Right. So for me, it's like, you know, those are the things, right? I mean, so for example, they say like, if you're trying to be a good cop, right? There are things that discourage you from not playing in, because again, when you call for backup, some of them won't give you backup. So I felt like it's the same with my job. If I don't talk to 100 people, I'll be considered a bad employee. So I had to do certain things that would get me to talk to. That's why I don't blame the people themselves. I don't think there are bad people in these specific jobs, but there are some things in the system that force people to behave a certain way. And if there's a pattern from many different, like, what's the constant and what's the variable? The constant is these things keep happening. The variable is these are different people from different walks of life. So there's something that is keeping them consistently behaving this way. And then there was something that keeps door knockers behaving a certain way. And well, anyway, to finish the story with that story, I'm thankful that that officer's cousin happened to work for the same solar company I did. But what if he didn't?
You'd have been up on that hood.
I would be up on that hood. Oh,
that's
sorry.
An Amber Alert.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It's like, if there's, you know, there's just a lot of, I've been saying, I don't blame any person at all. It's separate from the person. There's something in the system. There's something in the way the economy of things are, you know, because no matter what, we got to put food on the table. So if your lifeline is dependent on A, B, and C, sometimes you have no choice. So my heart goes out to that, but at the same time, something needs to change.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
I don't have the answers. All I know is something needs to change. What that changes, I have no idea.
I understand that.
Well, you know, we hope and pray. We hope and pray for a better tomorrow.
Right. Yes. Cheers to that.
Please let us know what you got going on. Anything's on the horizon.
So how about this? So maybe you can put this up. So being Filipino, I'm really proud of working with a lot of Filipino American talent that's going to come out. Do you guys know John Jambriones?
Not offhand, but we can definitely look him up and we'll probably ask to talk to him next.
Yeah. So John is in Ratched. He works with Sarah Paulson.
I've been watching that show.
Yeah. So he's a Filipino guy in there. So John came from the same theater company that I trained in the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so he's kind of a precursor. We come from the same acting culture back home. And then when my acting teacher back in the Philippines was actually his best friend, Robbie Guevara. And so when I came here, I've always wanted to work with that guy. And I thought I was going to work with him because the first job that I was supposed to do was The King and I. No, I did do The King and I, and he was supposed to play the king, but it was a non-equity production, and he's an equity actor, so I guess he had to turn that down, but I thought that was going to be the time when we could finally work together, and I was such a serious actor. I played the Krala Home, and for all the people who know what The King and I is, the Krala Home is a small part, an important part, but a smaller part, but I was like Shakespearean and really treating it like like, you know, it was the role of a lifetime. And so
every role is
especially because the guy who played the king didn't actually play him very smart, which is a peeve of mine. So I had to change it up, and I had to make my character into the smarter character, because there needed to be a reason why some of the things happened the way they did. And so for me to kind of put two and two together, I became the smart one. The king is kind of the passionate ruler, but doesn't really do politics real well. Well, anyway, fast forward to a few years. So I did The King and I in 2013. And then I got my... and then I first performed for the first theater of color, which is East West Players, in 2013 as well. I did a show called Beijing Spring. And since then, I've formed a relationship with East West Players. And finally, in 2015, I booked this show called La Cage aux Folles, which is The Birdcage. I don't know if you guys heard of that show. Okay. Yeah. And then he was just coming off of Saigon. because Miss Saigon had a revival and he played the engineer there.
Awesome.
And then I finally got to work with him, which is great. And then we finally connected, and it was an awesome experience because it was an Asian twist on it, using Thai ladyboys instead of the Western take on La Cage aux Folles, which was a great way to kind of put an Asian twist with it. And that's where I also first met my agent in that show, La Cage aux Folles. They met me outside. I was like, hey, so do you have representation? So it was pretty awesome because they watched the show that I was doing. I didn't have to go out and look for them. They found me. And that's how I started becoming an actor in Bosch, because after that, they sent me out to audition. Then I finally auditioned for the role of Officer John Anakti. And yeah, that was great. But the thing that I was going to promote is that he and I are going to be in an animated series soon. But I cannot say what the name is yet. But that one I can promote.
We're going to have you back on.
Yeah, it's what I can say, though, is it's about it's a Filipino animated series, and it will be pretty much very integrated with our culture.
Ooh. Nice.
So there you go. That one you can put in.
Very good. Very good.
Right.
Thank you profusely for taking the time with us today.
It was pretty awesome.